Did Martin Luther's political writings lead to the freedom of conscience, the separation of church and state, and German totalitarianism? Divine Kingdom, Holy Order, The Political Writings of Martin Luther is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Divine Kingdom, Holy Order by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Divine Kingdom, Holy Order, The Political Writings of Martin Luther.
You'll find your greatest concentration of atheists not in the Soviet Politburo, but in the editorial offices of the New York Times.
The way you fight this is by never making the compromise to begin with. If you don't compromise and understand that their technique is to short-circuit your thinking and get you to be able to make these little baby steps, they're going to be the ones in control.
I'm a pastor. I deal with issues pastorally. I deal with issues constantly. I deal with issues carefully but persistently. And I'm not a bull in a china shop, but I'm going to be faithful. You can count on that.
Confessional Lutheran Deadheads love Issues Etc.
Headlines like this can sometimes sound confounding, somewhat confusing. Burqa ban sparks another round of clashes in France. Now, why would France ban the burqa, the full face covering, sometimes extending all the way down to the toes, traditionally worn by devout Muslims in that country? And why would banning the burqa bring about not just one, but several waves of violence in a Paris suburb? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, July the 26th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery joins us to talk about several stories, two from France, one from Great Britain, and we'll talk about the persecution of Christians in Egypt, bring some of his expertise in human rights to bear upon that on this Friday afternoon. A little bit later in the program, Dr. Robin Lever joins us. We'll talk about the life and work of Johann Sebastian Bach. He's remembered by the Church on this coming Sunday, the 28th of July, I believe. A little bit from the Issues Etc. comment line, and then Dr. Stephen Sizer will kind of explain what it means when Christians get together, an organization called Christians United for Israel. They get together. Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister in Israel, speaks to them via satellite. They seem all to be agreed about defending Israel and its borders, expanding Israel's borders, and yet there is a strong, aberrant theology that runs behind all of it, as well as just kind of bad politics. We'll talk about Christian Zionism and Christians United for Israel that met recently in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is a regular guest. He's Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's authored and edited more than 50 books, including his latest, Christ as Center and Circumference. He joins us from France. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
Why has France banned the face covering, the burqa, since 2011?
Well, there are two main reasons for this. One is the separation of church and state in France, and the reason that that came about back in 1905 was that the Roman Catholic Church had an overwhelming influence on the political situation, and the purpose of separating church and state was to keep religious bodies from interfering in public affairs beyond their proper sphere. This is unlike separation of church and state in the United States, which came about for the opposite reason. It was to keep the state from interfering with the church. Anyway, in France, as a result of this, the state has been much more restrictive on religious activities. And the evidence of this is, for example, that public employees and school teachers cannot wear ostensible religious dress or ostensible religious symbols during their working activities. So that's one of the reasons. The other is a simple matter of control. If a person is wearing a burqa, and this totally covers the face, then in our current terrorist problem today internationally, one can't be sure with whom one is dealing. And this latest incident that took place just a very, very short time ago, where in the town of Top, there was a riot over the fact that the police insisted on removing this head covering from a woman, and her husband had a fit, started beating on the police, and the police hauled him off, and he was arrested, and a whole mess, a social mess, erupted as a result of this. But, of course, it is perfectly reasonable not to allow people to go around in complete anonymity. You can't tell under a total burqa, for example, where the face is covered and the rest of it, whether you might be dealing with a man rather than a woman.
So that's a security issue, and then there is the issue of the church vis-a-vis the state. How do you explain the violence that follows a police encounter with a woman simply asked to show her face?
Well, for one thing, you have to realize that this occurred in a very difficult economic and social environment there in Top. In France, outside of major cities, in the suburbs, there are areas where there is a great deal of unemployment, and also young people who really have nothing else to do than to create fusses. And very often the immigrant population has settled in these unpleasant situations, and therefore riots can start quite readily. This isn't anything peculiar to France. The same thing happens on the outskirts and of major cities throughout the world. That particular environment is undoubtedly the reason why there was this dreadful upset there.
How would you respond to, and this is being reported in the press here in the United States, that French Muslims feel like they're being stigmatized by laws like the burqa ban?
Well, they certainly do feel this way, but one must understand that if they are at the extreme end of the Muslim society, then they want to have their own legal system, the Sharia. They do not want to have the kind of legal system which exists in a modern democratic state. Fascinatingly enough, just 2 weeks ago, the French president, François Hollande, went to Tunisia and made the statement in Tunis that Islam and democracy were completely compatible. There was no problem between democracy and Islam. And this has been followed by a considerable number of articles in the press. These articles have opposed the viewpoint that Hollande presented. And they have pointed out, for example, that in Islam, you have very little that accords with modern human rights standards. You've got the treatment of infidels, the treatment of women, chopping off of arms and legs of criminals, etc., etc., all of those things that go on in Muslim countries. And they have pointed out that the only reason that these things do not happen in France is because France insists upon the application of French law, and that is not the Sharia law. This kind of incompatibility between an Islamic perspective and a perspective in a Western democracy creates tremendous tensions for people of Islamic belief, especially if they are at the lower end of the social scale and they are troubled by their economic difficulties at the same time.
So you're saying that the French president's statement can only be made kind of from behind the convenience of the French system of laws that does not allow Sharia to have a legal influence?
Yes, and of course, Hollande is an extreme socialist. And the socialists have been in power now for a year. Hollande said, in order to get elected, that he would solve all of the France's social problems and the rest of it. And the Islamic community voted overwhelmingly for Hollande. Hollande got into power by a very slight margin, but he was helped immensely by the Muslims of France. And the irony of this is, of course, that the economic situation has deteriorated considerably during this last year here in France. And it was his opponent, Sarkozy, who wanted to control the Islamic influence, whereas Hollande has not done anything to accomplish this. So yes, the Muslims are on the side of the president, but unfortunately, this president is an ambulatory catastrophe.
Staying on the subject of France, but changing the subject to same-sex marriage, the press here in the United States has been noting the kind of unexpected contrast between Britain, another country you're well familiar with, and France on the issue of gay marriage. How, with about a minute or so here, how would you describe the difference between these two countries and their various reactions to same-sex marriage?
Well, of course, in England, the same-sex marriage has been voted by Parliament now. So France and England are on the same track in this respect. But, of course, in France, the situation is that the marriage law has been opposed by almost half of the entire populace. The only reason that, or maybe more than that, the only reason that this passed was because the socialists have an entire majority in the French Parliament. They can put through anything, and they managed to put through this mariage pour tous, marriage for everybody business, which has, which is creating chaos and bedlam throughout the country. They're mayors who have resigned because they absolutely refuse to perform the marriage ceremonies.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about gay marriage in France and England. When we come back, we'll continue that and talk about the persecution of Christians in Egypt. Stay tuned.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Gloria Christi Lutheran, Greeley, Colorado. St. John's Lutheran, Rosemount, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Waltham, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri. Zion Lutheran, Gravelton, Missouri. Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana. Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee. And Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Friday, July the 26th, we're talking about some stories from overseas with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, bringing some of his human rights expertise to bear on these stories, currently talking about gay marriage in France and England. Dr. Montgomery, I take it then you're not surprised by the public protest of those, some even traveling from far outside of Paris, by the tens of thousands, young, old, everything in between?
Oh, yes, there have been gigantic demonstrations even equivalent to those years ago when socialists were in power and they were trying to eliminate church schools. But the pressure was so great that the socialist government backed down on this. In this case, the government has not backed down at all, in spite of the fact that these protests have been just overwhelming. There's been nothing like it. But their attitude is that the public can go hang itself. They're going to go through with this, and they have. And the irony of it is, of course, that the number of such marriages is very, very small. As in the United States, solidity of such unions is very questionable. So to have created this awful mess socially in France over a thing like this is another indication that that Hollande's socialist government doesn't know its head from a hole in the ground.
How do you explain the relative lack of protest in England on the same subject?
Well, the English are not protesters. An Englishman tends to avoid conflict if he conceivably can do so. So it just isn't part of the English character to make a fuss over this sort of thing. But it's, of course, an equally absurd business. The complicated thing in England, of course, is that the Anglican Church is the church of the nation. It is an official established church, and the legislation has been forced to take this into account so that a clergyman does not have to perform such a ceremony. That means that it's possible in England for a clergyman to marry only heterosexuals, and any homosexual couple will have to have only a civil ceremony. In France, the situation is somewhat different, because in France, only the civil ceremonies are recognized by law, and the civil ceremonies now must be performed for homosexuals. You can have a religious ceremony in France, as my wife and I did, of course, when we were married here, but you've got to follow this by a civil ceremony before the mayor, and it's the civil ceremony that actually counts. Okay, so in France, the clergy are certainly able to refuse, as they are in England, to perform a homosexual marriage, because technically in France it isn't the the official marriage at all.
Well, I wonder what you thought about the Queen's signature on this. Of course, she functions in at least symbolically in two roles there, as the head of state, the titular head of state, but also as a titular head of church.
Yes, but in the constitutional monarchy that exists in England, she has absolutely no choice in signing a law that has been passed by Parliament. The Queen is a serious believing Christian, and in recent years, in her Christmas addresses, she has gone against her advisors by including very specific Christian content into these addresses. And there is no doubt about the fact that she does not personally approve of this, but she doesn't have a choice. I mean, there isn't any longer an absolute monarchy, for goodness sake. The prerogatives of the crown are limited to such things as the ownership of all the swans in the country. If you kill a swan, you are killing the queen's property, and you can be prosecuted for this. There are a few of these vestiges of absolute monarchy in England, but they are very, very rare. As far as signing a law which has been passed by Parliament, the Queen has absolutely no choice.
Let's turn to Egypt with the last few minutes that we have here and to the plight of the Coptic Christians there. After the recent turmoil, I guess it could be called a military coup or martial law after their brief elections last year, are the Copts better off or worse off in Egypt?
Well, that's awfully difficult to say. The fact of the matter is that the Copts have always been a ghetto community in Egypt. And the irony of this is that they precede Islam. Coptic Christianity goes back to patristic times or a little bit thereafter. And yet, with Islam, they have suffered isolation from the general community. They have suffered persecutions of one sort and another, not necessarily overt persecution, but the kind of isolation that makes it impossible for them to have the impact on Egyptian society that they deserve. And in recent decades, there has been a considerable emigration of Copts from Egypt, and the Coptic community is therefore much smaller than it's been previously. The election that took place a year ago put the Muslim Brotherhood into power, and naive Westerners said, these are moderates. They're not going to create anything like the problems that one would expect. Well, they've done exactly that, and they've created such a repressive situation in trying to push Sharia law that finally the military cracked down on this. The military moved in, and the populace of Egypt in general has been entirely on the side of the military. And the result of this has been that Egypt has been teetering on the verge of civil war. It's a messy situation all the way around, and because the Coptic leader appeared alongside of the military in support of the movement against the Muslim Brotherhood and the president's control. Because of this, every chance that the Muslim Brotherhood has, it takes to persecute the Copts. And it's been terrible in recent weeks. I mean, destroying churches, killing Christians, simply because these people are not going along with the existing regime. It's hard to tell what's going to come out of this. It looks as if the military will prevail, and this will simply force the Muslim Brotherhood out of office. In a way, it's sad because this was a allegedly democratic election. But, what do you do when, in an election, the result is that anti-democratic forces gain control of the country? And that's exactly what's occurred in this situation. There's an interesting parallel to this. A number of years ago in Turkey, a far, far rightist Muslim organization endeavored to establish itself as a political party. And this issue was taken to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg. And the court said the government had every right to refuse this party its right to exist. Why? Because, said the court, if the party gained control, it would eliminate all human rights in the country. In other words, there's a limit to democracy. Democracy can't very well tolerate anything which would in turn destroy democracy, because that will eliminate the possibility of anybody else operating.
Dr. Montgomery, before we let you go, you recently completed the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights there in Strasbourg, France. Tell us about this annual academy.
Well, it's the only Institute of Advanced Studies in Human Rights anywhere, and it's a wonderful two-week program every summer in the French Rhineland. We just finished our 17th annual session, and it was, as they all are, have been, a wonderful success. We had Yuva Siemen Netto as one of the professors. We had the usual teaching by Professor Craig Parton, who appears on Issues Etc. frequently, and your humble servant. And next summer, we're going to have Dr. Angus Menuge from Concordia University, Wisconsin, who's taught for us before and is a stellar lecturer. We encourage the listeners to Issues Etc. to sign up for this as quickly as possible. We've already had people signing up for next summer, and we can take only 20 people each summer. To sign up, it's a matter of sending a $300 deposit, which counts against the total cost of the program. And the scholarship situation is very generous. We have $1,000 scholarships, which will reduce the cost of attending the Academy from $3,000 to $2,000. We really encourage listeners to get in touch with us about this.
Folks, you can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights and a link to the Academy at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He has authored and edited more than 50 books, including Christ as Center and Circumference. Dr. Montgomery, thank you very much for being our guest.
It's always a pleasure.
When we come back, Dr. Robin Lever will join us. We're going to talk about the life and the work of Johann Sebastian Bach, remembered by the Church, this coming Sunday. Stay tuned.
Issues, etc. What does this mean? We want to hear from you. Why do you listen? How has it helped you? What are your favorite topics? Who are your favorite guests? And what makes Issues, etc. unique? Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Issues Etc. What does this mean? 618-223-8382.
Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shop.logia.org, shop.logia.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shop.logia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shop.logia.org.
Imagine steadfastlutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm. So check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
If your travels bring you to Northwest Indiana, the Saints of Heritage Lutheran Church in Valparaiso invite you to join us for a Christ-centered, cross-focused divine service at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. For more information about visiting Heritage, please contact Pastor Joseph Ostafinski by calling 219-464-2810 or sending an email to heritagelc@frontier.com. You can also visit us on the web at www.heritage.com. lcms.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The theme of the scriptures is the promise of Christ and the coming of Christ and the meaning of that. And you can lose that in pietism.
Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, co-host of the White Horse Inn radio show, speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The common emphasis is the emphasis on sanctification. Sounds good, biblical, it is. But you get the emphasis on the wrong syllable, and we'll lose our own children.
You can listen to Dr. Rosenblatt's presentation, Making the Case Against Pietism, and all of our presentations from this year's conference on our new audio DVD. For a donation of $300 to Issues Etc. before Labor Day, we'll send you this audio DVD. For more information, look for the DVD logo on our homepage, issuesetc.org.